Welcome to Split the Defense.
Split the Defense.
Leafs Postgame Edition. Split the Defense is presented by LaForest Electrical Contractors. Professional and efficient service since 2004. Serving the Kingston and surrounding areas. Alongside co-host Craig Pierce and producer Ted Evans, here's your host, Jordan Webster.
Austin Matthews scores number 58. Massive nights from Pontus Holmberg and Bobby McMahon. And the Leafs smoke the Oilers. We're back on Split the Defense, Leafs postgame. Thumbs up this episode. Subscribe to our YouTube. Rate us 5 stars. Get us going in the comments here. CP, why don't you take us away with your initial reactions to this one?
Oh, I love this game. This was a good one. I mean, it helps that the Leafs won, but there's something about an Edmonton and Toronto game. I guess it's just like the Matthews McDavid, but it's also the Hyman story. It's the Corey Perry story. It's all of it. So I was into it. At the start, it was like a kind of felt like Edmonton kind of came out with the bigger jump, but I think their like early goal kind of turned it around. The Leafs like started to dominate. It definitely like swung both ways, and I'm not sure like the 5-0 going like at that point like really was the true story of the game, but definitely what I like to see. And like really the defense to me was just unbelievable how they were dialed from the beginning. Edmondson just like from, I think it was just like the first minute or two where he got his opportunity to get one in on McDavid. And just, I don't know, it felt like a team that like had the right idea of how you win kind of playoff style games and getting the chips in and everything. And yeah, it was great. I love that. I think Joel Edmondson is my number one star, even though like lots of people aren't going to notice him a lot, but like just into the areas, like getting his shots on McDavid, Dreisaitl, like just, he knows how to play hockey the right way. Like at least in my eyes, like I just love him.
He went absolute ape shit at one point tonight. He had McDavid holding them back from going to attack after Jack Dreisaitl after his slash there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Edmondson was fired up. Seems to be finding his comfort zone here with this team. Certainly looks to be fitting into the role that we've expected him to take on. I like Joel Edmondson as well. Hell of a game. 5-0 the Leafs started up on, but it really was a battle of the special teams tonight. There were so many penalties called tonight.
I was screaming at points. I hate penalties. It's dumb because a lot of those penalties aren't being called in a month from now. So like that's what bugs me, is like a cross check and a guy goes down soft, like, you know, in a month that's not gonna be a call. So some of them frustrated me, but I mean, I guess you got to see both like power plays, which is nice. But just one of those where I just wish that this league would friggin' referee the same way all the way through the season. Well, I guess they do. It's after the season in the playoffs where everything changes. So
that's not even true, though. There's like a first 20 games reffing, and then there's like the middle of the season reffing, and then kind of near the end where it gets really sloppy. And then it just goes away for the playoffs. So really, there isn't one consistent set of refing rules from the beginning to the end. That's just not true. Yeah. So huge nights for Holmberg and Bobby McMahon.
Yeah.
But Knies was on the top line with Domi and Matthews to start the game. And he ends up getting benched because of a very small mistake, that not able to clear the puck. And after that, Holmberg goes in. First shift, gets a goal. Keefe keeps him in. Second time, I think it was second or third shift they had out there, Holmberg scores again. Fantastic line with those three on it. Do you not think? That's a good balance. I mean, I don't exactly think that's a playoff caliber top line, but those three players and the styles that they play together work very, very well.
Oh, yeah. It definitely works against Edmonton, too, where they have such a top-loaded line, because, like, the Matthews line didn't have to take the brunt of that defensive role. And so, yeah, you don't really have to worry about, you know, Domi and Holmberg having to, you know, be on the ice with Dreisaitl and Hyman. So I think, like you said, it's not going to work all the time, because they're just not, like, that's not a high enough caliber for me to have Matthews on that line. But I think that, like, it's great to see Holmberg being able to just jump in anywhere. Like I feel like he just has this like it's like he does, he's not like a true skill player, but like he makes skilled plays, you know, like he's the majority of his game is just forechecking and doing the right things. But once in a while, like he just kind of makes a play towards the middle of the ice, like some sort of stick handle that you don't see from like guys like him. Like you're never going to see Kampf do that. Like even Doer, you're not going to see Doer do that. They're more of like, they're going to do the simple thing all the time. So yeah, great to see Holmberg being able to fit in. I felt like Knies didn't deserve to be like off that line for the whole game, but when someone goes in and scores
first goal,
can you do, right? So
hard to deny it.
Yeah.
And also not just that top line tonight, but the second line. Now Nylander had a goal. I was on the power play, so it doesn't really count. But if they were up against the best line tonight for the majority of the night, and that's Bobby McMahon on that wing, Bobby McMahon also gets two. What did you think of him tonight?
I mean, I just love that they put him back with Tavares. Those two are made to play together. We haven't seen a game where they haven't had some sort of chemistry going. So, like, I think that they need to be stapled together. Like, if you're going to move anyone, move Willie off that line. So, I think that, like, last game, I didn't like that Knies was with them. They've never really played together much, and there wasn't really a great amount of chemistry when you've already seen multiple times that McMahon can play up the lineup and his game style plays really well with John Tavares. So yeah, great to see them together. I think that it's crazy actually to me that they were able to do so well defensively when, like, if you tell me those three players like to match up with the biggest line of Edmonton, like that seems like going to be a rough night, but they did well. I mean, it's what you have to do when you're kind of short guys. The only other solution was to put, you know, Willie with Matthews, but they just have been, you know, leaning away from that recently. So,
So you think come game one of the playoffs, after seeing what we've seen in the last couple of games, it's definitely going to be the second line of Bobby McMahon, John Tavares, and probably William Nylander?
Well, the thing is like it's not like the last couple of games, because last game they didn't play together. Like Bobby was down on the third line. So, like, I think it's a no-brainer. I think that that's a line right there. Like, you just chalk that up as your second line and, you know, work the other stuff. Because, like, I just think that we've seen that Willie, he doesn't necessarily play his best with Tavares, but he has the most experience playing with him. Like, they seem to have figured out a way that they can work together. And, like, Bobby just seems to work so well with Tavares that it, like, yeah, it just gels well. So, yeah, I'd say, like, you lock that one in. Like, the only thing... like, I can't really see a situation that makes it different unless, like, Knies makes it back up to the top line and then Bertuzzi gets bumped down to that spot. And, like, I wouldn't hate that, too, because that was a line that was very successful for, like, the majority of the season, the first half, basically. That was the best line on the Leafs, the most production, mostly just because of Willie. But I wouldn't hate if Bertuzzi ends up back with Tavares, I guess, but no other option, I think. And I not necessarily love the idea of Knies being on the top line anyway. So I think best case, you have Bertuzzi on the top and then Bobby on the second.
All right. I don't know what you're going to do. I mean, Holmberg obviously can be shifted back down. We're not married to that. But Domi at this point is looking so, so good that when you have Marner come back, it's really going to be interesting to see what Keefe decides, because us fans here are screaming for Domi to stick up there with Matthews. Like, the media has been coming out. Talking about, or I guess just giving interview quotes of them talking about each other and just how much they like each other off the ice, and they seem to be clicking really well. And I mean, the King of Toronto and Austin Matthews and the Kid of Toronto and Max Domi, I don't know, he's not from here, I guess, so much as he is born and bred in this franchise. So, like, it's hard to not want that to work as a fan.
For sure. Especially because he's had trouble finding a spot, right? Like, everybody has been cheering for Domi, and just even when it hasn't necessarily been going great, because you know the story and, like, what he brings night in and night out, just, you know, he's had trouble finding line mates that suit him well. So, yeah, it's one of those where I kind of feel like there's four top liners at the moment with, like, Bertuzzi, Matthews, Domi, Marner. And so it's going to suck for the one that doesn't make it on that line, because I think that any three of them could be, like, works really well. One of them, like, if we're going to put Bobby on the second line, then one of them's on the third line. And I just hope that they don't end up kicking Domi off the line. And worst case is he goes back to center. So, like, yeah, I think he should stay.
I think, like, honestly, at this point, I think Like, you need Mitch back. You need to have a look with Mitch and Domi with Matthews to see if it, how it looks. Because obviously Domi and Marner play the same-ish game with the playmaking ability, the carrying of the puck, and the pushing of the offense. Obviously, Mitch is more well-rounded and more successful offensively. But if you have both those guys on paper, everybody's going to say that's not going to work. So you want Bertuzzi in that spot. But what we really need is Mitch to come back and just get a few games of run here to show that it could work, or that we're crazy and living in La La Land and that was never going to work, and that we should just go with the meat grinder on the top. And, you know, a Matthew Nyes, a Tyler Bertuzzi. Something I'm a little more surprised is, and I think it's maybe just because he's emerged so quickly, is that you haven't stapled Bobby McMahon up there during this time.
Like on the top line, you mean?
On the top line.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I was surprised that Bobby's done so well in the second line, to be honest. And to keep pushing him up, I think, is like asking a bit much of him. But like, I just don't think that with the guys that you have, he's not the first choice to me. So, but Bobby in a, you know, in a situation where you're forced, I wouldn't feel uncomfortable about him being up there. But I think you're getting so much out of him at the moment that I wouldn't want to ask him to play like up the lineup too much. Actually, even though we played against McDavid tonight, but it's just one of those. I mean,
Justin Hull shut McDavid down a couple times too. So,
yeah, that's true, that never happened after that fact. So, yeah.
So something we got to talk about: bad news at the end of the game. Ilya Samsonov, he played phenomenally tonight.
Unreal.
Like when it was 5-0, I wasn't sure he was going to let in a goal. He looked like a different goaltender. He was on his game tonight. He looked fantastic. But at the end of the game, he gets hurt, and, you know, we love to speculate here, so I'm going to say it's got to be something in his groin or hip or, you know, maybe a knee, but, like, he pulled something. He stretched too far on that last play. How do you feel about that going forward for the Leafs?
Yeah, I mean, it was tough. Sammy from the get-go was just dialed. Like, there was one of the iconic shots from the blue line through traffic where he was peeking one way and he had to save it on the other side. Those like almost always go in, it seems. And he was dialed. When I saw that off the get go, I thought that he was going to have a good game, and yeah, he impressed. It's not like he had to make like a ton of these like amazing saves, but he was very calm. It looked like Wall out there, to be honest. Like, he kind of had a different play style in a way. So I never saw him go like post to post when he wasn't necessarily necessary. And it just, yeah, that last play didn't look good.
Place.
Yeah. The last play though, like, that's rough. I mean, those are the ones where it's, I'm not sure if he banged like something off the post, if he like overstretched, and it's just one of those
like
tweaks.
A hyperextension to me.
Yeah. Same here. Like, that's what I was saying in the group chat. And that's rough. I mean, he's just found his game. It's one of those where he had won the spot. Like, if the playoffs started tomorrow and he was healthy, he would be the starter. This is exactly, I guess, why we have three goalies. You know, like, he is the one that's playing the best right now. But I'm not necessarily freaking out that the season's over, because, like, you know, you've seen Jones be able to put like on a streak, and Wall is the guy that we ideally want to have the spot. So.
No, the Leafs aren't in trouble right now.
No, like, they're not in trouble. I wouldn't go that far, but I like would rather Sammy be healthy, no question. And we need to see Wall, you know, put on some good performances. So I don't feel great, but I don't think that it's like trouble time. You know, I'm not wishing they went out and got a goalie previously, is kind of the situation.
Still not good. So yeah, no. Ilya Samsonov, I expect to hear at some point here that Sammy will probably be out for some time. That tweet has not dropped yet, but it's expected at this point that we'll probably hear from Sheldon Keefe saying in the post game, or maybe tomorrow. If he comes back, it'd be a miracle. Honestly, it would be a miracle the way he hobbled off the ice. So Max Domi got into a fight tonight. That was phenomenal. I didn't even see what or why, and all of a sudden it just broke down. There was probably like 40 scrums in front of the net tonight with a good hyperbole in there. But there were so many scrums. And I was thinking, like, you know, if you guys are just going to keep pushing around, maybe somebody fight about it. And finally they did. And it has to be Max Domi. So did you know Max Domi's 5 fights this season for the Maple Leafs is a career high for Max Domi?
I didn't know that, but that doesn't really surprise me because, like, this guy isn't necessarily a fighter. And yeah, he just cares so much. I'm not sure there's a situation where he's going to turn down a fight, really, which, like, I hope that, you know, he doesn't get like go down too far down this path. I think he's doing it perfectly, like right at the moment. You know, 5 at this point is, like, you know, more than I think I was expecting from him, but he's just winning everyone over big time. And, like, and to actually show up well, like, and do well in fights is the big thing. Like tonight, like, he connected with a couple.
Oh, he got a good one. Yeah. That must have hurt. Janmark's gonna feel that tomorrow in his jaw.
Yeah, I think Janmark. So, like, there was the icing call, like, just 2 minutes prior to that, and he was just beacon at the linesman. And I think that Domi and him are coming down the ice, and Domi kind of elbowed him in the jaw area, like a little high, just as they're scrumming. And, like, Janmark just had enough. And obviously Domi's willing to do it. So yeah, I think that it was kind of Janmark's temper kind of boiled over, but definitely not the two that I thought were going to go tonight. Like, I thought Nurse was going to be the guy on the Edmonton that would go. He seemed to want to prove a point a little bit tonight, but yeah. But I love when Domi fights. Like, I was standing. I love it. I just pray that we bring this guy back. Like, please bring him back. Like, I would bring him back over anyone else. Like, at least he cares and is willing to put everything out there, you know.
So what would you give Max Domi for a contract? 5x4?
I saw this conversation happening on Twitter a little bit, and, like, that's a little bit rich, you know. That's tough to sign. And, like, sorry, is that $4 million by 5 years? I mean, yeah, it's a little rich. Like, I would do it just based on,
I mean, I feel like 3.5 is too little at this point. Like, you can't give him 3.5 for 5 years, maybe for 2 or 3, but, like, is that what you want to do?
What's been a nomad contract cost?
That's, you know, that he's going to be too old and you're not going to want to pay for that. Maybe what about, you know, who would that be? Perfect. The Nick Paul deal.
Okay. What's he make?
Like $3 million for 8 years or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Three, like, that seems perfect for me.
Because then we don't feel bad when he's not playing anymore in 8 years, paying him that $3 million. But at the same time, he still gets that total number that he's looking for.
I mean, in 8 years, we should be able to bury in a $3 million contract. So, I wouldn't even blink. If he wanted something like that, like, sign on the dotted line. You know, like, once he creeped towards 4, and if, like, that's where I'm like, well, I don't know.
Cap's going to be up so much in the next 8 years, though. Like,
I was thinking
5 just to not have the contract on the books in a few years. But honestly, with the Leafs' money they already have and their ability to hide this kind of shit, like, yeah, sign him to 8, do the Nick Paul a la Nick Paul deal, and, you know, ride him off into the sunset as a Toronto Maple Leaf. I think that makes the most sense.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about the special teams. I brought it up at the beginning of the night. The Leafs have allowed, where is my stat here? 10 goals in the last 9 games on the penalty kill. So tonight's penalty kill was being praised by the broadcast and even on Twitter. And all of us are thinking this penalty kill is looking good and Joel Edmondson and all these good things. But still, over the past, I think it was 5 games or 6 games since the trade deadline, I looked it up tonight, the Leafs penalty kill is 66%. Does that concern you at all?
Yeah, definitely. We're getting, like, at the beginning of the season when it sucked, it was like, well, we got a lot of time to figure that out. But we're at the point now where you should have been able to figure it out. And we've added some guys that are on the penalty kill. So, like, Dewar's been added. Joel Edmondson's been added. Lubushkin's been added. They all penalty kill. Like, that's their jobs. So it's not nice to see that there hasn't been, like, a bump. I don't know. This is like a, like when they, so Joel Edmondson and Draisaitl traded penalties tonight, right? And it was like, you would think immediately that that's great for the Leafs. But it's like, well, like, Joel Edmondson's might be the best penalty killer. yeah, so but... it gets kind of dicey at that point where it's like, I don't know.
It was
like
4v4 though, wasn't it at that point? I mean, that makes it 4v4. So you're not on the penalty.
They're on the power play. No, they're penalty killing.
Yeah,
okay. So like, and then they both took one. So then they're still killing the penalty. But it's like one of those where like I'm not sure if that was a great thing for him to do. In normal circumstances, 5-on-5, I take that every day of the week. But I don't know. It's I don't know what to do. Like what the solution would be. All those right guys are on the penalty kill. Like I'm not sure, you know, who you swap in or
66%, out. 66%. Yeah. I don't know. Do you think a lot of that could just be attributed to Mitch Marner being gone? And do you think that's going to take a swing back up? Now, I mean, for the season, they're riding 77%-ish. Maybe he's gone down since the last time I checked that. But, you know, do you expect an uptick and to not worry once Mitch is back? Or do you have serious concerns about the special teams going into the postseason?
Yeah, it's not just about since Mitch has been gone. Like it hasn't been great all year. So it's like, yeah, we're clearly going to see a little bit of a downtick like when he's out of it, because he is our best penalty killer like as a forward. I'm not sure he fixes the solution. I think they just kind of have a bad penalty kill.
I feel the same way, CP. They might just have like bad penalty kill.
Yeah, if you're the first power play in the league, then you can kind of like justify it a little bit and say like, okay, well, like the numbers offset a little bit, but they're also struggling there recently, so it doesn't make you feel much better about it, right?
So Get Well Soon is just going off in the comments, and I love your comments, but I'm not going to read them out right now. You're
that's
amazing
for sure.
anyways, so the PK being an issue, having Mitch back on it, I think that I don't think they're going to swing too much, but I wonder if all of that changes when you go into the postseason, starts fresh, and they end up being like one of the best penalty killing teams. The power play is really more where I'm concerned, and I really hope that they can get that going together. But Timothy Liljegren has really, really turned it around. Timmy Lil tonight, he snaps one towards the net. Willie just beautifully tips it between his legs, puts it in for a nice goal there. But in his last five games, he's got 5 points. Now, he had struggles coming up to the deadline, and even, you know, when after the deadline passed, the last few games, I'll say his last three games, he's looked really good. Before that, he had struggles. 5 points in his last five games, and we go, Liljegren's back. Immediately, I see in the comments, 14 points in his past 16 games. So we can't take much out of this point streak. But how do you feel about Liljegren? Do you think he's been turning his game around?
Yeah, I think so. It's like, I don't know. I have the same opinion on him like that I did 20 like games ago. Is that like you're going to see periods where this guy is amazing, and we're probably going to see like, you know, two or three game stretches where he's not so hot. So like he's, I think, going to float in and out of the lineup in the playoffs. Just because he isn't like, I don't know, I guess that's hard to say when he's on the power play, you know, number one power play, but I just think he's the third right shot defenseman. And like currently we would have to get two defensemen back in to, and we like, it's a clear case where Timmins is coming out first, but then like, you know, like who do you take out after that if Brody slots back in and Labushkin slots back in? So I think he'll rotate in a bit and here and there. But I've always liked Liljegren. Like he's first of all, he's funny. I find that like the way he talks to the media and stuff like that, I find humor in. And so I like him as a person. And then he just has shown these stretches of like making the right decisions most of the time. And I like a two-way defenseman. I don't like as like just an offensive defenseman. And he kind of fits that bill of like, you know, you're supposed to majority of the time be focusing on defense, but like, you know, currently you're on our number one power play and I don't feel weird about it. And like, you're almost always going to be on our second power play. So like, I think he's a great player to have. Just like the expectations for him just have to be limited. Like, we're not looking at a guy over the three games that's now going to be slotted on the top pair. Like, I think in his role with his new D partner, he's been playing really well. And so, like, I really like Liljegren, and I hope that he sticks around for a long time. But he's just always going to kind of have those flaws. Maybe in two or three years, like, he's kind of like the perfect $5 million two-way defenseman. But just, like, at this point in his career, he is what he is, I think.
Yeah, he looked great tonight, though. 2 assists, 1 on the power play, as we were just talking about. Snap that to Willie. You know, Timmy Lill, I think that he looks more confident. And I don't know if it's like he's holding the puck. It's not that he's making plays. It's just that he doesn't seem to fan as much. He doesn't seem to make such a quick decision when grabbing the puck in his own zone. And I guess really I can't attribute that to him hanging onto the puck a tiny bit more. But you're right. He has been making good decisions lately. But you're telling me that you think that is attributed to just a good stretch and to not buy into this too much. He's going to just revert back into the pumpkin that he is.
Well, I don't like calling him a pumpkin because like he has definitely some stretches where he plays that way. But for the majority of the time, he's a pretty solid defenseman and we have stretches where he's really good, you know. So like I just don't want to think that like this is like he's breaking out, because I think we've seen this before. Like when Riley was out, he played amazing for 5 games, you know, then you saw a dip of like 2 or 3 games. Now he's back and he's playing, you know, 2 or 3 great games. So. Like, I'm not saying that I'm not buying into him. I'm just saying that, like, I like who he is, and currently he's on one of those hot streaks. It's kind of like Matthews scoring. Like, Matthews goes on these tears of 20 games scoring 20 goals, but then, like, goes 10 games and scores 1. That's similar to how Liljegren plays defense, you know? I don't know.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah, so it just concerns me that maybe now we got, what, 11 games left or 12 games left till the end of the season. You go into game one, round one. Maybe he plays well for the first round, and then he's just not the same guy. And the Leafs, they don't really have a replacement for him. So I think that's kind of concerning. But he has been looking good lately, and I hope that you're wrong. And I hope that this is just him maturing and finding his role. And, you know, this is an uptick. And next year, you know, his floor is going to be that much higher. And then, we just continually see him grow into the player that he's going to be. He's a 24, he's 25, I think, now. Right. So in the next couple of years, we're going to see who Timothy Liljegren is and who he always was. And then at that point, we'll be able to make a decision. And there's still time between now and then for him to get so much better. So I think that, you know, these stretches of play are very encouraging to see Tim find his game and settle into those roles. And I honestly, like, I've seen him do this before, so it's just nice to see him, you know, like when he was covering for Mo in the past. I mean, I think it was him and Sandin last year. They both looked great. When he's been elevated in different positions, it seems like he's always taken a step in the right direction rather than the wrong direction. So that's really encouraging, and I just hope that he keeps it up, and that when we go into the playoffs, we just see some sort of beast mode Timothy Liljegren.
That'd be awesome. Like he's made great strides since like when we drafted him. There was a quick decline in his value because like everyone kind of wrote him off that he wasn't like he didn't have the decision making that was required of a defenseman in the NHL. And
well, then he had mono too for like the year before he got drafted, right? So he was out for like the whole
I mean when he was a Marley. Like yeah, actually okay. As a Marley. Like he just saw that like yes, he has some skills and he's a good defenseman.
He was drafted as an offensive defenseman, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah. And he's made the decision to switch. That and like I think like in episode 1 or something of our show, I was talking about Liljegren and how like that's one of the things that I love like most about him is that like him and Sandin were like kind of a very similar player. And one of them decided that they were going to become a two-way defenseman and the other one didn't. And Liljegren's the one that decided to be a two-way defenseman. So like I think he's in like the 3 or 4 years since we've started seeing him crack lineups, like he's gotten better and better each time. And he's like, you know, raised his hockey IQ and like still we're going to see like we see those, you know, poor decisions once in a while. But yeah, like he's made great strides. And I think from when he's 27 to 31, he'll be one of like the more reliable defensemen. And with just this little bit of offensive uptick and you can put him on to a power play. But yeah, so I think like, yeah, you keep him around and it'll pay off for sure.
For sure.
We've put enough work in on this guy anyway. Like how much the investment's like what, 6 or 7 years at this point since they drafted him.
So. And they really rode him to become this two-way defenseman more than they did Sandin, right? Like when he was in the Marlies, he's in the AHL, they really developed that side of his game and there was lots of conversation about that side of his game being developed. And then Sandin was just, you know, so good offensively that they didn't really develop that side of him. Now he's still, I would still say at the end of the day, offensively, Sandin is better than Liljegren. But all around, yeah. I think Liljegren's now stepped him. Last year, I would have, even before Sandin got traded, I would have said, I'm not sure. I think, you know, it's pretty damn close. But seeing Sandin go into the role that he's in, and Liljegren even in the role he's in, and the way that he's just developed and played, I think the Liljegren's surpassed him, and it was probably the right decision to keep him over Sandin. So tomorrow we are playing the Carolina Hurricanes. We got another back-to-back, two back-to-backs this week for the Leafs. What are you expecting in this game? Low-scoring affair, high-scoring affair?
Like somewhere closer to the low-scoring affair, I would assume. I don't know. Like Carolina to me, I look at that lineup, and it's just like a bunch of like, you know, better than average, but no one
mid-city.
Well, I don't like calling because it's like above mid-city. I called them, you know? That. Yeah,
they're mid-city. They've always been mid-city.
If you averaged every hockey team, I think they'd have a really good average because everybody is kind of up there. But I think that.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I think. But that's kind of what you get when you play a game against them, is it's not necessarily exciting. I don't know. I didn't necessarily see a lot from Jake Guentzel last time. So, well, I mean,
he did have the shootout winning goal, though.
Yeah, yeah. And I think also a couple points. So. Yeah. But yeah, I just mean to stand out a little bit more than he did. He's been there long enough that you should see him like in his true role. And yeah, we'll see. But I would hope for, you know, the Leafs to show up well. They actually, like, I'm not sure. This is just my general feeling, but I don't necessarily worry about the Leafs on a back to back. It's typically like the first game that they normally shit the bet. So yeah, like we'll see how they come out. Maybe the stats totally prove me wrong there, but that's my vibe when I think of back-to-backs with the Leafs.
Yeah, well, hopefully they stay strong because they really came out flying tonight, and they can get another W against Carolina Hurricanes, because that we need to see. These games at this point are like a litmus test. You need to find out, is it basic? Is it acidic? What are we doing here? Is this going to work? And I think Carolina and Edmonton are really two good measuring stick teams. If you can play them back-to-back, you know, it's kind of playoff style. I just think that that's who really defines playoff hockey going into the season, is that boring, grinding, low event style. And I think with the additions of Kuznetsov and Guentzel, that Carolina, you know, is a team that you should be measuring yourself up against. Now they don't have a whole ton of stars, but stars don't always get you anywhere. So I really, honestly, I'd like to see how this team does, because the last game against the Carolina Hurricanes was fucking terrible. So hopefully this works out better. But we will be back tomorrow after that one and give you our thoughts all about that. For now, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for commenting. Hit that like button, subscribe to our YouTube, and please rate and review the show. You can find us on X at STDP Hockey and Split the Defense on all other socials. See you tomorrow night. Peace.
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 Thanks for tuning in to Split the Defense.
Split the Defense.
Leafs Postgame Edition. Hosted by Jordan Webster, Craig Pierce, and producer Ted Evans. Split the Defense is presented by LaForest Electrical Contractors. Professional and efficient service since 2004. Serving the Kingston and surrounding areas.